Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Today's episode includes raccoons, Vaseline, physical fitness, hiding under your desk, and, of course, 20th century laissez-faire politics. Hello, and welcome to Cutting Class Podcast with Jess and Joe.
April Fools! No, you haven't hit play on the wrong podcast. This is the Presidencies of the United States, and I am your host, Jerry Landry. However, in honor of this jovial holiday, I, along with a group of podcasters, are playing a game of switcheroo today, turning over our feeds to another podcast for an episode. Thus, for your listening pleasure, Jess and Joe of the Cutting Class Podcast are taking over. If you like what you hear, the Cutting Class Podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else fine podcasts can be found. Or you can check out their website at cuttingclasspodcast.com. Since we've been paired up, I've been catching up on their presidential history episodes as well, and I think you'll want to cut class with me today and give them a listen. I'd also like to give a shout out to our fellow Operation Switcheroo partners, Eddie and Patty at the BAYK podcast, and a special thanks to Moxie LaBouche of the Your Brain on Facts podcast for organizing all of this. I'll be linking to all these on my social media, so head over to my Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram for more info. Now, without further ado, I hand it back over to Jess and Joe so that they can share with us more about Silent Cal Coolidge.
We are just so excited to share this information with each other and with you.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be a cool episode. I'm really excited.
So what do all these things have in common, of course?
The Vaseline, the raccoons... they're all things that are currently in this room.
These are all, of course, moments with Calvin Coolidge.
It's got to be. It's got to be with you, the one man for the job.
There's only one person who can have all those things in common. So, Joe, can you tell us a little bit about who is Calvin Coolidge? We've probably all heard him before, but we may not remember back to high school anything about this guy. So, who is basically this guy?
Okay, as a high school teacher, and as you know, we do have to talk about Calvin Coolidge. So I just know kind of the basics, and it's what I show the kids. And
that's all
I remember. Just the high points, I guess, for high points that we have for Calvin Coolidge. He's one of our 20s presidents. He takes over after President Harding dies of a heart attack, and he's known for not being particularly colorful, which, as I think today, we will argue. The opposite of
totally,
that.
Totally untrue. He is easily one of the more interesting presidents that I know about now.
Right. He's kind of one of those dudes. He's never listed in top 10. He's never bottom 10. He's just there. And a lot of people just say he didn't speak a lot. He didn't do a lot. Very hands off. Right. Kind of what you would imagine a 20s president would do. Let the economy do it. Let the people do their thing. And call me when the Russians invade.
So much like all of our lessons in the classroom, he is one of those things that has come and gone and quickly been forgotten.
that cuts way too close to the bone.
But unfortunately, that is way too simple for Calvin Coolidge. There's way more to him. And so this is the 1920s, right? This is a cool time period of the Jazz Age and the Great Gatsby and Flappers and Prohibition and just, post-World War I trauma. A really exciting time. So one of the things about Calvin Coolidge is sometimes he's known as Silent Cal. One of the things that Calvin Coolidge was known for doing was staying kind of taciturn.
I appreciate that.
Not a man of many words. So I got some quotes here from Calvin Coolidge that I think really illustrate this idea. So first off, one of the quotes from Calvin Coolidge is, "If you don't say anything, you will not be called upon to repeat it."
That is sagacious advice if I've ever heard it.
If you don't say anything, you'll never be asked to repeat it. So Calvin Coolidge was a man who often would go long periods of time with saying as little as he possibly could. And possibly my favorite quote to illustrate this point is the following quote: "If you keep dead still, They will run down in 3 or 4 minutes. And if you cough or smile, they'll start up all over again.
I actually found that same quote and I couldn't stop laughing because the article that I read on it said that he actually said that to Herbert Hoover.
In fact, it was. Herbert Hoover would come to talk to him about, you know, how on earth did you get through so many meetings? And can you imagine?
He just didn't say anything.
Can you imagine coming to the President of the United States and having this important meeting, and you sit down with him and you start to kind of spill the beans and talk about everything you need to talk about, and he just stares you down? When he was the governor of Massachusetts, long before he was vice president or anything like that, actually one of his successors came to him later on, and this guy had been busy in meetings until like 9 o'clock at night. And he said to Calvin, he says, you know, how on earth did you get done by 5 o'clock every day? You know, what is the secret? What are you doing wrong? How is it that I'm working 4 hours more a day than you are? And Calvin Coolidge looked at him and I imagine just kind of deadpan said, you talk back.
And that was the only answer he gave?
That was the entire response.
As I was doing my research, I think I would place Calvin Coolidge in my top five. I know Ronald Reagan did. I think I am too. I'm gonna go full Reagan on this and give him 10 Reagans out of 10. I found another quote too, because now that we're talking about Silent Cal, just a real short one where apparently he complained a lot as president of what he put the perpetual clamor for public utterances. It just infuriated him, I guess.
I need everybody to just be quiet. All right, just let me think. Calvin was known as, there's really no way to quantify this, but a lot of people seem to think that he was probably one of our most intelligent presidents, which...
I'm not going to argue. Everything that you've told me so far, I'm totally on board with this guy.
I kind of almost see him as one of those guys that's almost so smart that he kind of makes other people uncomfortable in the room.
Or he's so smart as to realize if he didn't speak, people would think that about him and not
exactly.
Talk to him.
Another great story about him being Silent Cal was actually he visits the West Coast, which was, you know, kind of a hard thing to do in the 1920s.
Yeah.
You don't have air travel very easily. So he's out on the West Coast and he's interviewed on the new radio. And
exciting.
Yeah, the radio host asked him, you know, do you have any message for your West Coast listeners and, you know, the West Coast Americans? And supposedly he sat silently for a while and thought to himself and just said, goodbye. as he was running for office, another great story was a reporter asked him, do you have any statement on the campaign? Calvin said, no. Can you tell us anything about the world situation? No. Any information about prohibition? No. Knowing that they weren't going to get anything from this president, the reporters finally just decided to just leave.
Just left?
They just left because he wouldn't tell them anything.
So his advice, I'm going to look at that quote again. The perpetual clamor for public utterances. If you don't give the people what they want, they'll go somewhere else.
My favorite part of that story is after the interviewers are leaving, he actually kind of raises his hand. He says, hey, guys, wait. And they kind of turn around thinking, you know, he's going to tell them something useful. And he says, don't quote me.
Didn't he give him a finger gun afterwards or something?
Probably the classic story that most people might have heard, but it may not be true, but his wife did authenticate this later on, was there was a fancy dinner party.
Oh, yeah, this one's classic.
A prominent woman sat down by Calvin Coolidge, and she tried to make conversation with him, and she tried her best all night. She was just trying to get some sort of conversation out of him.
Fool's errand.
Finally, she gives up because he had been sitting there stony-faced, nothing to go on, and she said, oh, Mr. Calvin Coolidge, you are so silent, but you must talk to me. I made a bet today that I could make more than 2 words out of you. And Calvin looked at her like a boss and said, you lose. Which is just perfect because she's like, I need 3 words and, you know, nothing.
That's up. So it almost sounds like he was the action star of his day, hitting him with these deadpan one-liners. Because, you know, he probably had to think about that one for a little while. And then how can I really... you know, get this debutante, this tart. How can I get her out of my face? And bam, you lose. It sounds like something McBain would have said.
Yeah, it's a McBain kind of quote. I mean, it's a Clint Eastwood kind of moment. I mean, nothing better than these kinds of one-liners that he came up with.
You lose.
Finally, along that lines, probably the most appropriate tribute was after Calvin Coolidge died.
They had a moment of silence?
No, when he's going to finally die of a heart attack at age 60, right?
Oh, that's
apparently doing a puzzle at home.
It was just too much.
The excitement was too intense.
He couldn't find that last piece.
He will die at the age of 60. And probably the best statement came from the New Yorker's Dorothy Parker, who said, when she heard out that Calvin Coolidge had died, she said, "How do they know?"
I found that same thing. And I actually, this doesn't really go with Silent Cal, but I think this says volumes about this guy. And I think the more we talk about him, the more I genuinely think I enjoy this person.
Mm-hmm.
He said apparently at one point in dealing with politics and just dealing with the stress of the office and the job, he apparently told somebody, "If you see 10 troubles coming down the road, you can be sure that 9 will run into the ditch before they reach you." So I guess just wait. Just do your thing.
What other things can you share me about Calvin Coolidge that you might have found?
I did find, actually it was on the same article where I found about the Dorothy Parker, Alice Roosevelt.
Okay.
Who I think he's the oldest daughter of TR. Apparently Alice Roosevelt once said, and I don't know what this means, but I loved it. It got me tickled. In talking about his appearance.
Right.
You know, and we will be talking later on as how do you build that body like Calvin Coolidge?
Of course.
So this is the look we're going for. Imagine Alice Roosevelt here said that Calvin Coolidge looked as if he had been weaned on a pickle.
This is kind of like a sour, puckered
That's
expression.
What I'm imagining. I'm imagining like borderline desiccated and bumpy.
And it's so weird, you know, looking back into these people's lives, because on one hand you have these really kind of dour looks and these, right, you know, bland, stale presidential figures, but then you learn some things about him that he almost seems childlike in some ways.
Yeah, and I guess, and even before we get into that, we can, you know, I've got a couple of quotes here that I've used in school before to kind of, you know, because part of the whole thing we teach about Calvin Coolidge is the laissez-faire politics and the hands-off, and I always use this quote, especially with the booming 20s economy and all this, is he's quoted as saying something to the effect of, "The chief business of the American people is business," which is so stupid, but at the same time, when you actually think about what he's saying, it's so profound.
Right.
So this is the type of guy we're talking about, and there's another part to that quote we don't need to get into, but, oh yeah, the other one here, this one I think is borderline even more ridiculous. But also fits with the 20s, and then when we juxtapose this with what we're about to learn about this person.
Yeah.
So the chief business of American people is business. Also, the man who builds a factory builds a temple. The man who works there worships there. And to each is due not scorn and blame, but reverence and praise.
Wow. I mean, here's a guy who can turn something as simple as, you know, working in a rubber nipple factory into something that is spiritual, right, and poetic.
Yeah, you know, I know when I go to work every day, I imagine it is sort of a quasi-religious experience. I feel transfixed as walking through the hallways, the hallowed halls.
I know there's a lot of bowed heads and silent figures in my classroom.
There are. Yeah, I really feel like, you know, I didn't build the school, so I didn't create the temple. But as someone that's employed by one, I definitely feel like I worship there. I definitely do. I really feel it. That's why I wear my priest collar.
And to have a true body by Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah, one that looks like you were weaned on a pickle.
Right. It's not just about slender good looks or that nice facial appearance. Sometimes you have to exercise your mind.
Yeah, and yeah, definitely.
This is one of the things Calvin Coolidge, I think, was really known for doing. I think Calvin Coolidge, as such a smart individual, he would kind of play jokes on people that I
keep them on their toes, right?
Only he found funny, right?
I like where this is going.
So one of the things Calvin Coolidge would do is he would like to prank people, and usually these pranks, again, like, I think he was the only person laughing about these jokes, which maybe that's like a sign of his brilliance. Maybe he's so far above everybody else that he's making these jokes that nobody else really gets.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, he's dead, but Cal, if you're listening, I'm currently laughing.
In 1924, one time he invites this large group of military admirals and generals over for a meal. And so, you know, they expect, logically, that this is an important meeting. There's an upcoming bill that actually was on there that we need to get
into. And I know that if there's a group of men that I would target immediately for a prank, it's high-ranking military officials.
Yeah, the fun-loving military. They're always known for their light humor and, you know, good spirits.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So they all get prepared. They prepare their documents and reports and, of course, all this paperwork. And, you know, they think, oh, we're meeting with the president. Here's this big deal.
Right.
So they sit down for basically a brunch. And during this entire meal, he doesn't speak to them. Just silence. And and you can imagine the tension in the room is like cutting through like a cold quiche. Just nothing, nothing there. They're waiting, you know, kind of like, well, when is this going to start?
Yeah, so it's the ice that doesn't break.
And the funny thing to me is, so you would think that at some point Calvin would you know, break. Calvin never breaks. Finally, they finally pick up the subtle hint that this is a giant waste of time.
Yeah.
And eventually leave. Calvin never actually, like, springs the joke. Those closest to Calvin say that as soon as these guys got up and left, and a few guys who did stick around, he just burst into laughter, thinking this was the funniest joke he'd ever played.
And the best part is, you know, especially with a lot of these government salaries, you know, paid for by taxpayer dollars, that's the real joke.
It's all this time. It's completely
wasted. Somebody
wasted.
Else paid for this. Joke's on
it's
you,
just the American
America.
Taxpayer. No big deal. So another joke that he was known for doing was that he had a head of detail, right? One of his top guys named Colonel Edmund Starling.
Okay.
And it was kind of a little game. I get the impression from the readings I've done is that it was a little game between him and Edmund Starling that he would try to sneak out of the White House and not let his security know where he was.
Is this one of those games where the other person playing the game doesn't realize that a game is being played?
I mean, based on what I've read from Starling, he kind of took it kind of good-naturedly.
Okay, okay.
But at the same time, what a bizarre thing for the president to do.
Yeah, you know, can you imagine in 2017 a viral video of Donald Trump sneaking away from the Secret Service just for the jokes?
I mean, and he took this game pretty seriously. I'm going to get into some of these things that he would do, but yeah, just for the laughs, trying to evade your own security guards.
Yeah.
So one of the ways that he would try to lose Edmund Starling is he would try to sneak out the back door entrance or through the basement, only to find out that the other members of the White House staff kind of picked up on this game, and they would let Starling know where he was.
Buzzkills, man.
So there was a great story in which he actually kind of got out, you know, and kind of got off to the grounds, and he was almost off of the White House premises. And Starling was waiting there kind of at the gates, and he apparently got really sulky because he got caught.
I found a thing about him being sulky that I cried about when I read
it.
And not because I was sad, just because it was so ridiculous. In 1924, so this would have been, if I'm thinking right, after he won the election, you know, because he finished Harding's term and then I think was reelected. He of course, nominated an attorney general. The Senate, you know, you could confirm or deny, and they rejected this person. Apparently, upon hearing the news of the mean old Senate rejecting his choice, one of the bodyguards, maybe it was Mr. Starling,
right,
reportedly said, and I quote, that they saw Calvin Coolidge take a curtain cord from the Oval Office anteroom and absently tie it into knots.
This is a guy who needs an early fidget device, right?
In the 20s, kids, before we had fidget spinners, you had to just tie the drapes into bows.
In sadness knots,
because they wouldn't take his supreme or his attorney general.
Maybe it was a physical representation of the turmoil within his heart.
His slam poetry that weekend was going to be off the chain.
Coolidge fully unplugged. Unplugged and off the curtain rod. Sterling actually said that if the mood suited him, and that's the words he used, if the mood suited him, Calvin Coolidge would sometimes, he had a buzzer, right, that would notify the House staff that he needed something. And if the mood suited him, he would press this buzzer and alert everyone that actually he was on the way to the White House.
Yeah.
Which would then, you know, result in the policemen and doormen and everyone be getting in position and kind of making the place look presentable for him. And then Calvin would intentionally take the back exit so that everyone would be waiting around for him to show up and he would never be there.
That's always a bad thing. It's in every TV show and cartoon, that's always the setup is someone's injured and they have the bell.
Right.
Calvin Coolidge, again.
I think he started that.
He was the inspiration for Looney Tunes. I think I found it in the research. I'm just going to go ahead and say it's fact.
Yeah, of course. I'm going to say that Calvin Coolidge is the first known ding-dong ditcher of the White House. And it's actually the president himself, which is even better. Another really great moment with this buzzer is sometimes he would ring this buzzer while at his desk, just so the White House staff, he would frantically start pressing this thing, right? Just so that the White House staff would rush into his office trying to see what was going on. And he would supposedly just hide under his desk or behind the curtains.
Like George Costanza.
And they would look around for him. And this is apparently not just a one-time event. Like, this happened multiple times, such to the point that they finally took his buzzer away from him. You should have seen the curtain cords after that day. They were full of knots.
The whole White House was tied into a knot when he came. Or can you imagine? You're Mr. Starling, and you go in there, and you're thinking, oh, my God, you know, there's some sort of emergency. Maybe he's having a heart attack. And you run in, and you look, and you see the curtains. And then you look down, and you see a man's freshly polished shoes sticking out.
And you must think to yourself at some point, this is the president of the United States hiding behind the curtains.
Right. This, you know, I guess at the, you know, that time he wasn't the guy in charge of the nukes because we didn't have him, but maybe it was just it was a different time. You know, it's a simpler time when you could play the buzzer game with
the White House security. As you know, I have a daughter. She is 2.5. Maya.
She's great. Yeah, she's wonderful.
Adorable kid. And, you know, every now and then we'll play hide and go seek. And she's not really at the age yet where she fully gets hide and seek.
Right.
Where she'll run for about 5 seconds and then just fall on the floor and cover her face and
freeze.
Just pretend like she's hiding.
Yeah, taking the T-Rex method? If you don't move.
Right.
If we won't see you.
But it's cute, you know. For the 2.5-year-old, I can't imagine with the president of the United States,
a fully grown man
hiding behind the curtains or onto his desk,
right? A fully grown man who otherwise will not engage in conversation. So you have no idea what's going through this guy's head when he's doing this.
I would kill for a real picture of Calvin Coolidge huddled under the White House Oval Office desk. Just with boyhood glee on his face, waiting for the Secret Service to find him.
Right.
Can you imagine just what that might have looked like?
And now it makes it even better to now imagine that when Ronald Reagan took office, there was I think it was a picture of like Harry Truman that was up in the White House.
Right.
And Ronald Reagan had it taken down and replaced with a picture of Calvin Coolidge. Like that was his guy.
Is there a presidential like favorites game that I'm not aware of?
I think there is. Can you imagine if deep down in his heart? And we can maybe even do an episode on Reagan and some just his cheesy jokes about communism.
Right.
He definitely had a little flair for kind of humor.
Of
do you think maybe the reason he put Coolidge had nothing to do with Republican ideals? It was totes about about just screwing with people.
Maybe it was just for the kicks and the giggles. The old Gipper had a couple jokes up his sleeve, and one of them was Calvin Coolidge.
I'm sure every now and then, you know, he would call for Nancy and then hide behind the hide under the covers. Maybe Nancy won't see me.
She'd see a trail of jelly beans up to the bed and be like, all right, Reagan.
Okay, Ronnie.
This ding-dong dishing wasn't just left for the buzzers, though. Apparently, he would also do this to the elevator operators.
Oh, man.
Where he would buzz the elevator operator, you know, when they actually had a guy in the elevator who'd come down and lower the lift to you.
Can you imagine?
And they would open the door to find that there was nobody there. And he had jumped off to the side to take the stairs.
So, first off, I'm sure that this elevator operator is you know, got to be a minimum wage, right?
Right.
This poor person has this job where you have to stand in an elevator and just go up and down all day. And poor guy, his boss, the man, the leader of the free world, is going to screw with him and then take the stairs to build the body by Calvin.
Well, that's how you get that extra body, is taking the stairs when you could have taken the lift. It's a whole part of the workout regimen.
Did we? We either just became British, or you just made a reference to a service that drives you when you're drunk.
Speaking of making the perfect body by Calvin,
I was say we got to get back to this.
We've
mentioned this. You said it. I want to look like a pickle. I want Alice Roosevelt to look at me and think, man, I want that body.
I'd be happy with any Roosevelt looking at me and thinking about my body.
Look at that gherkin man.
So what are some of the other ways that Calvin would keep his body fit and trim?
Yeah, I've looked, and so I know that we're going to have to talk about this. I don't know if this goes in with the fitness, but now may be the time to break out the petroleum jelly.
The Vaseline?
I think it might be time.
Okay, how... No, I'm going to just let you explain it to me, because if I start trying to guess where this Vaseline's going to fit into the story of Calvin, then this is going to go somewhere that's going to have to be labeled explicit. So tell me, how does Vaseline fit into the story of Calvin Coolidge?
So I'm taking a real roundabout way to get here, but so you figure, you know, part of the physical fitness is also the nutrition you put in your body, right?
Right.
Okay, so everyone knows, you know, you are what you eat and all these things. So apparently, that I found from the New York Sun, in the, when they put together these kind of facts on Calvin Coolidge, that his favorite breakfast was a bowl of boiled wheat and rye.
What?
Yeah.
A bowl of boiled wheat and rye.
Yeah.
A bland breakfast for a seemingly bland president.
I have a feeling why they did not market this and do like Ian Malcolm, and now you want to sell it, now you want to sell it, now you want to sell it. Why they didn't put this out there, and that was the tagline, was a bland meal for a bland person.
Coolidge flakes.
Keep cool with Coolidge.
Now, I'm imagining with my box of Coolidge flakes, a tiny, like, toy-sized jar of Vaseline that comes along with it, but I'm still not sure how I should apply it as part of my regimen.
Right. So apparently... I'm just going to go ahead and say this is part of the fitness. This goes with the nutrition. This goes with the relaxation. You got to get the sound mind as well as the body. Right. And what better way to prepare yourself mentally, spiritually, for a day of not speaking than having one of your presidential aides come by, bring you in bed your boiled wheat and rye. Sir, Mr. President, we have your boiled wheat and rye. Also, your daily petroleum rub for your forehead and scalp. And then as you sit there, as Calvin Coolidge sits there and shovels this gruel into his gullet, some poor employee of the White House has to massage his scalp with Vaseline.
And was there any like thought behind the Vaseline? Like, what was the purpose of this ritual?
Oddly enough, I found a quote from Calvin Coolidge as to why he enjoyed this, and as you can imagine, it's as taciturn as it gets.
Okay.
So you might say, Mr. President, sir, why the bowl of boiled wheat and rye with a chaser of Vaseline rubbed down on your face? Quote, it was good for the health.
Calvin Coolidge doesn't need to answer your questions. No. This is what I want to do. I'm the president, man.
And I don't think he did. you can imagine it's like, you know, when you go to your grandparents' house, or sometimes, you know, like my parents always tell me stories about grandma and grandpa putting, was like Vicks Vapor Rub on their chest.
Right.
And they would get sick. And you know that smell. Everyone knows that smell of like kind of, I imagine it smell like Bengay almost. I know that's not what petroleum jelly smells like, but I figure if you have enough and you mix it with boiled wheat and rye.
Right.
That his room has got to smell like a hospital bed.
you know, it sounds pretty healthy, and maybe that was just what he needed to do to get kind of started for the morning.
Yeah, because I know you've got something coming up. What's the main focus of the Body by Calvin? How do you really build those abs?
The truest abs? Well,
the truest laissez-faire, hands-off abs you've ever seen in your life.
There's a couple different ways that you could do this.
The roaring abs.
But it's a way that's a little bit unorthodox.
I like it.
I'm not sure many people would guess, but it's kind of one of these au naturel ways of dealing with it.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to know the way that Calvin kept himself fit and trim and constantly youthful and energetic and, quite frankly, just looking amazing?
What is your secret?
Well, raccoon walking. That's right. Calvin Coolidge was known for having a pet raccoon. And not just having a pet raccoon, but literally walking the thing like a dog around the, the White House grounds.
Did you catch a name? Did it have a name?
For it totally had a name.
It's got to be Rocky, right?
It's got to be Rocky. It's not going to be Rocky Raccoon. It's Rebecca. Rebecca the raccoon.
Of course. I didn't mean to presume the raccoon's gender.
At first he did, actually. When he first received the raccoon as a gift, he actually called it a boy in the quotes of it, and he'll find out later that it was actually a female raccoon, so they'll have to change the name
retroactively. After it made a scathing YouTube review of Calvin Coolidge. So wait, somebody gifted him a raccoon?
Yeah, no, okay.
So what is happening?
This is the amazing thing. It's okay, first off, it's Thanksgiving, 1926.
You give gifts for Thanksgiving in the 20s?
Apparently, this is a thing for the president, is to receive gifts.
This is why the 20s roared. Like, you can just do whatever you want.
What an amazing time. Okay, so first off, Calvin's family for Thanksgiving in 1926 is going to receive in the mail turkeys, quail, ducks, geese, rabbits, a full deer.
UPS, of course, delivered that one.
And of course, Vinnie Joyce of Mississippi.
They sent him a person?
No.
Very laissez-faire in terms of human trafficking.
You know, whatever goes. It's the 20s, man. Vinnie Joyce of Mississippi thought it was a good idea to capture and essentially send a live raccoon to the president of the United States.
Yeah.
What's even crazier to me is this is a day and age where that was accepted. You could do that.
We are going to have to do an episode on the 1920s Postal Service. This is insane. Can you imagine what that office is like when they're trying to process these packages?
It's a zoo. And don't get me started. There's more on this that I want to get to. But here's the thing. You know why he sent Calvin Coolidge this raccoon after all, don't you?
Okay. There's got to be there's a raccoon joke I'm missing, or there's No.
It's Thanksgiving, 1926. And here's the quote that goes along with it. Apparently, Vinnie Joyce of Mississippi thought... And was quite firm on the fact the raccoon would have a, quote, toothsome flavor, end quote. Rebecca the raccoon is Thanksgiving meal.
We may have to pause this episode so that I may look up the adjective toothsome. How does that relate to flavor?
Well, it's got a nice... enamel flavor along with it,
right.
You know?
Right. You know, especially, you know, it's got a kind of a mixture of sort of a halitosis tooth decay, but with a little game.
I mean, this is actually not that unusual. William Howard Taft famously in 1909 would chow down on a 26-pound possum that he will lovingly name Billy.
That's disgusting.
For Thanksgiving.
That's...
We're going to have to do a whole episode on Billy Possum because it's Billy absolutely an amazing story. It does not end there.
I wonder if we could, you know, they always ask you this question. You know, if you go back and have dinner with somebody, who would it be? I'm going to go ahead and say William Howard Taft.
Oh, you know it'd be amazing.
So that we could, I haven't eaten meat in a while, but so that I could have some of the Billy Possum, but also so that I may ask him, sir, how toothsome is this meal? on a Calvin Coolidge scale of 1 to 10, or Billy Ray Cyrus or whomever you said it was that gave it to him.
What's the toothsome level? Where does this fit on the scale of one to toothsome? And it seems to me like a shame that the practice of being able to ship live animals to the president of the United States has gone away, right? Can you imagine capturing an animal and sending it to Barack Obama and leaving to him a note? Hey, I think this would taste great. It would be toothsome.
here's some fixins for the kids.
I think your kids would really get a good bite out of this possum I found in my backyard.
Right.
The thing that cracks me up is, you know, okay, so let's go back here for just a second. 1926, okay. He's got a deer, he's got geese and rabbits, and these things are all alive.
They're all alive, okay.
Because this is, you know, pre a lot of early refrigeration, and the best way to preserve the flavor is to keep the thing living, right?
Right.
So can you just imagine... the eye rolling from the White House staff as the Thanksgiving neared and they just start getting these...
Right, as the parade ensues.
This parade of animals coming into the White House that is to be consumed by the first family.
You are alive when they start to eat you.
He's supposed to eat this thing, right? Rebecca the raccoon is supposed to be eaten, but as you know, that this is not going to happen.
Right.
Coolidge and his family will feel pity on the little critter and decline to eat it, saying, quote, "It might be for some people... but not for me."
You know, I, again, I'm going to side with Silent Cal on this.
I'm not going to eat this little thing.
Right? No judgment, but I'm just not going to eat it.
Some people think that this actually might have been the first kind of case of presidential pardoning at a Thanksgiving meal.
Let's get to the bodybuilding, dude. Like I didn't hit the gym today because I wanted to record this episode.
Well, I do have a little bit more on Rebecca the Raccoon. Do we want to do that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean,
okay. As much as I do want to get to the gym, we got a little bit more on Rebecca the Raccoon. Now, it's okay. So, as I promised, there's a lot of bodybuilding that goes with this raccoon. He didn't just receive this.
That's right. Yeah. Walking the raccoon.
So, first off, one of the tips for Body by Calvin is don't eat raccoons. Right,
right.
You're going to stick to the more toothsome flavors of deer and geese and turkeys and things like that. But the Coolidges will not eat Rebecca the Raccoon. Actually, what happens next is even, I think, a more bizarre choice. They don't give this trapped raccoon away. They keep it. The public was not terribly shocked as much as we were today. In fact, Calvin Coolidge was kind of known as an animal lover.
Okay, see, I think I really do like Calvin Coolidge.
I mean, he seems like kind of a cool guy, despite his whole, you know, pickle sourpuss kind of phase.
No, I'm totally on board.
He was known as an animal lover. Of course, this opened the floodgates
right.
to all kinds of animals being given to him, which
being sent to the White House.
Was, you know, a day and age when you could just ship live animals to the president like, as a normal thing.
Oh, I think I know where we're going with this.
The press is going to actually start calling the White House the Pennsylvania Avenue Zoo
Killer?
Because of
okay.
all the crazy animals. And I got a list of animals here of things that literally were in the White House with the president for a time.
Right, and this is in the 1920s. This is not in 2017.
Right, 1920s. Just to show that the White House is a crazy place today, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We don't need to get into that right now, but it's not that different from the past, from some of the bizarre things that have gone on.
Like, right.
History, and this is a real theme here for humans are weird, is just that, like, we like to think that, oh my gosh, society is decaying and everything's getting worse,
right.
but, like, the further you dig in the past, the weirder it gets.
Right, or you know, we've been flatlining for literally decades.
Right, I mean, this is just a continuation of the same ridiculousness that has been going on. So here's some of the crazy animals that they had. Slews of dogs. Lots and lots of dogs. Cats, canaries, you know, the typical, you know, cat, bird.
Yeah, yeah, thing. Okay, cool.
But there's some other bizarre animals that actually were bestowed upon the Coolidges. There was a black-haired bear from Mexico that
wow,
was sent
okay.
to him. There was a bobcat named Smokey.
And hey, wait a second.
Smokey the bobcat.
Smokey the bobcat.
That's right. They had a donkey named Ebenezer.
That's a great name for a donkey.
Yeah, absolutely. An African pygmy hippopotamus that they named Billy. An antelope. Because, you know.
Right.
Why not?
I would expect these in the Teddy Roosevelt White House so that he could shoot them.
You hunt them wildly.
Just so that he could shoot them.
And I think my favorite bizarre animal, which just shows kind of the weird dry humor that I think is Calvin Coolidge,
right.
is he receives a pair of lion cubs.
Okay.
No joke, the day that you can ship live lions to the president, and nobody really, like, bats an eye.
Right.
You know, a bear, lions, whatever. Okay, so he gets two lion cubs, and he names them. And this is the names that our laissez-faire president is going to name them.
Right.
First one will be called Tax Reduction.
And Protective Tariff.
The other one will be named Budget Bureau. But here's a guy who never misses an opportunity to keep the hands-off economics
right.
into the headline. So most of these animals will end up, you know, as you'd expect, in the local zoo. They
yeah,
will not
yeah,
keep
yeah.
an actual hippo in the White House. But amazingly, Rebecca Raccoon will stay as a fixture of the Calvin Coolidge household.
That's awesome.
Rebecca the Raccoon is going to stick around. And as you can imagine, you know, raccoons are wild animals. They're not like
yeah,
dogs.
It's got to, and they've got to always have that kind of, that smell, like.
Kind of game.
You know, can you imagine?
Toothsome smell?
It's too toothsome for my blood. Because, you know, you got to think, too, how would you bathe a raccoon? Can you imagine Silent Cal trying to put this thing in the bathtub?
There's actually an amazing moment when they would put him in the bathtub. Here's a quote from him. Quote, "We kept her chained when out of doors, but in the house, she had her liberty. She was a mischievous, inquisitive party, and we had to keep watch of her when she was in the house. She enjoyed nothing other than being placed in a bathtub with a little water and given a cake of soap with which to play.
What?
In this fashion, she would amuse herself for an hour or more. End quote.
You know that somebody was just really covering up the fact that replace all references to she with he, and that story is about Calvin Coolidge. Or they'd come home, and Silent Cow pushes the buzzer. He lets everyone know he's coming home.
Sneaks in the back door with his raccoon in arm.
But I was thinking, actually, he comes home to the raccoon, and he notices that all the drapes are tied in knots.
Speaking of drapes, you know, raccoons are wild animals, and this thing was known to terrorize the White House staff. It was
just like Calvin.
Maybe he saw a little bit of himself in Rebecca the
Raccoon. It's his Patronus. Expelliarmus or something.
So instead of Voldemort, it's like snake and skull symbol in the sky. It would have like...
It's got like FDR socialism. A big old he who will not be named Vladimir Lenin.
Rebecca the Raccoon was known to scamper the halls, rip up clothing, upholstery, knocking over plants, and even, you know, raccoons are kind of smart, so they would, like, unscrew light bulbs and throw them on the ground.
As if to challenge the White House staff, like, do something.
Now, the poor White House staff would be desperately trying to catch this thing, and they would put it in multiple cages. They, in fact, call her, quote, a regular Houdini, end quote. As the raccoon would constantly break out of harnesses and different leashes and cages because it would just gnaw its way out of almost everything they would put it in. Eventually, someone designed an actual collar that she could not, like, get to. It was a special collar and chain. And this is where the body by Calvin comes in. Calvin was known to love this little raccoon so much that he would often be seen strolling the White House grounds with her in tow.
Body by Calvin, there, like, there it is.
You know, getting some lunges in with his raccoon in tow, doing some full-body squats with a raccoon, like, fully pressed out.
Invigorated from his wheat and rye breakfast.
I always imagine him getting a little cardio in by pressing that buzzer, running up the stairs to try to beat the doorman lift, and then buzzing his, like, desk buzzer, and, you know, him and Rebecca just, like, cuddling under the desk as the White House staff desperately tries to find the two of them. One amazing incident with Rebecca the Raccoon, and I'll put her to rest. The Easter egg roll of 1927.
This is actually, we covered this today in class.
Did you really?
No.
This is not the kind of history you're going to get in your classroom, and which is why I think it's such a shame that we never get to really talk about these kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. This is way better than his political policy.
Yeah, we could talk about supply-side economics. Or we could talk about the women, children and photographers who were harassed and harangued by Rebecca the Raccoon at an Easter egg party.
Yep, I know which lesson I want to hear.
Here we have the famous Easter egg event on the White House grounds. It's kind of a staple today. You know,
right,
this
yeah,
is
yeah.
a big thing. Photographers and men, women and children and people come out. Something to the tune of 30,000 people.
That's crazy.
So there's all these kids and families on the White House lawn, and somebody thought it would be a brilliant idea to bring Rebecca the Raccoon out to frolic in the grounds.
I think, you know, I know who that somebody was.
Calvin Coolidge. With a sly smirk.
He reportedly turned to Mr. Starling and said, "Watch this."
Starling gave him that look. Calvin, no.
Sir, please.
Rebecca was going to be brought out to mingle amongst the crowd. As you can imagine a wild animal doing with 30,000 kids running and screaming, she's going to panic
yeah.
and have a freak out moment. The fascinated children and crowds are going to kind of send her into a frenzy in which she will claw, bite, and scamper her way to try to get to freedom. In fact, even clawing and biting the first lady so badly that she had to receive medical attention. And Rebecca the Raccoon will have to be put back in the White House to restore everyone's safety.
Poor thing. And not Mrs. Coolidge. I mean, poor Rebecca. And you know, when Cal saw his poor wife just ravaged by this raccoon, that's nothing a little petroleum jelly couldn't fix.
Just rub a little Vaseline on it and you'll be fine. We know that Calvin has kept his body fit and trim a couple ways. An incredible breakfast, a nice scalp massage. A
soothing massage.
Your early morning raccoon walks.
Right.
A good prank or two to keep the mind young and youthful.
Right. We get to the the coup de grace.
The coup de grace. What is the final step of true fitness by Calvin Coolidge?
How do you build that body?
How do I get a six-pack abs like
boiled Calvin? Wheat and rye alone does not create biceps.
I've been trying it for years and it's still not working.
Yeah,
for
so
me.
Have I. the piece of the equipment, you got to remember, you know, science has really come a long way with the types of equipment we now use in the modern gym. You know, the various presses and even electronic
lunges.
Equipment. Yeah, raccoon lunges. And you do all these different things, and you know, you run from the pygmy hippo at the gym, no problem. But then, you know, some of the things is you didn't tell me, out of all the animals, no horses apparently were sent to the White House, which is not entirely true.
There was a horse.
Remember, this is keeping with the times. It's very modern, you know.
Yeah.
This is the age of electricity. And somebody, I don't know if it was a friend or an admirer, maybe it was me, and I used the cosmic fidget spinner to go back in time and send it to him, sent him an electric horse, like a hobby horse, or like a thing that you would ride at the honky-tonk.
Okay, so you're going to have to describe this thing for me, because what I'm imagining in my mind is, you know, the little, like, the steel horses outside of, like, the grocery store that you put, like, 25 cents in. I'm imagining that kind of thing. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Like a little
based on the on the picture I saw,
yeah,
it probably moved that fast. It had a little saddle. And I guess this is what it was. And apparently he would ride this thing for like up to 3 hours a day.
Are you serious?
to you know, strengthen the legs, and you're gonna you know, squeeze a lot, you clench.
You know, you work on the thighs and the buttocks.
You know, he may be hands off economics, but he's hands on when it comes to thigh building. And
you got to keep a firm grip on your hobby horse.
Right. So what it looks like is, I don't know who sent it to him, but I did find, and this is totally a plug for a future show. The guy who apparently took credit for creating the electric horse was a cat named John Harvey Kellogg.
Wait, Kellogg like Kellogg Corn Pops?
Kellogg like is in,
or hey, Kellogg Corn Flakes, I guess.
Yeah, or it's a Kellogg is in like, don't touch yourself.
What?
You have to tune in to the next episode of Humans Are Weird to figure out this story's insane.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to hear more.
No, you know, this is definitely for another show. And then, of course, like Kellogg apparently like sold the horse by saying that that it perfectly imitated a horse's gait. Perfect.
Perfect.
You can imagine this Walmart-style horse.
Now, I'm trying to wrap my head around this mental image for a moment. Here is Silent Cow, a man known for...
He wouldn't even say yeehaw upon its back.
No, I imagine him like candidly looking at Edmund Starling, head of security, as he watches him to make sure that he's safe on this toy horse, saying, woohoo.
Watch me take off like the economy. Just to sort of put the weird cherry on top of this just awful boil of wheat and rye mash that we've created here this evening, I found a quote from Calvin Coolidge's personal. His physician told the Chicago Tribune, and I assume with a straight face, when asked about the electric horse, because I guess people knew that he had this thing, and he reportedly replied, "The horse is not much for looks, but it's great for the liver and fine for reducing flesh."
I know what I'm looking for in a good workout is a nice liver workout, you know? Well, that is an amazing way to keep a body by Calvin. Remember, exercise the mind, exercise the gullet, and exercise, of course, your electric hobby horse. Okay, so I've learned a lot about Calvin Coolidge that I never really thought. I mean, here's a president, Silent Cal, who is often ignored, misremembered, and generally just overlooked as a boring figure of history. But
yeah.
Really, what an incredible example of how humans truly are weird.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Please check us out at cuttingclasspodcast.com, where you can check out all the links to connect to us on social media.
And better yet, you know, even more helpful to us is, of course, just leave a review in iTunes if you like this. A few stars, some sort of feedback, anything.
Even if you don't like us, just review it.
Yeah, because honestly, we got nothing right now, so yeah, that'd be fantastic.
And all the hate mail you got, just address it to File 13.
You can put up there with all of our students' comments.
Right.
All right, so we love it, guys. I hope you guys had a good time, and we will hopefully see you all next time.
That's right. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. The Battle of Waterloo was one of the most famous turning points in world history. But what happened next? My name's David Montgomery, and I'm the host of The Siecle, a history podcast that tackles exactly that. Join me as I cover France's overlooked century in between Napoleon and World War I. The Siecle, spelled S-I-E-C-L-E, is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and can be found wherever you get podcasts.